Hello, boys and girls. Welcome back to another special edition of the Michael Deacon program. We are joined by a very special guest this evening, Norman Ohler. He is an award-winning German novelist, screenwriter, and journalist. He spent 5 years researching for his latest book, Blitzed. He went through numerous archives in Germany and in the United States. He spoke to eyewitnesses, military historians, and doctors. Long before Blue Meth had a meteoric rise on Netflix and cartels in Mexico dyed their meth blue, the Nazis were first on the scene. Tonight, we jump into that very subject. Now let's bring in Norman.
Hello, how are you?
There you are. I had to unmute you. What's going on, Norman?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. I can't really complain. I'm glad you are here tonight. I really do appreciate you taking some time to talk to us all here.
Sure, it's a pleasure.
Yes, no problem. And of course, for those that don't know, Norman is actually currently in Germany as we speak. Also, I'm sorry about that. I'm cutting up in the audio here. I apologize, folks, if you can hear that. But yes, Norman, I definitely want to get into your background here. Very curious about yourself, my friend. Did we lose you, Norman?
I'm here. I'm not sure if you lost me. I don't know if I can hear you all the time.
Oh, am I breaking up on you?
I think the connection should be good.
Oh, no. What about now? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Yes, Norman. So I wanted to get into your background here as we begin.
Okay.
Yes. Tell me about yourself, Norman.
Well, I'm a writer. I live in Berlin, Germany. I've published 4 novels and 1 nonfiction book. What else do you want to know?
I was also very curious about the 90s for you. Those seem to be pretty fun times in your life. I thought you could tell us about those days.
Well, in the 90s, I actually lived in New York City, and I was writing my first book, which is a detective story set in New York. And then I decided to move back to Berlin because in Berlin the wall had come down and people from East and West were meeting for the first time. And there was a lot of a very lively club scene going on in Berlin. So I was interested in that. So I moved back from New York to Berlin and wrote my second novel in Berlin, which is called Mitte, which means center. It's about the center of Berlin, and it tells the story of how the city reinvented itself. And those were the 90s for me in Berlin.
Were you also some sort of DJ?
No. I know a lot of DJs and I know club owners, but I'm not a DJ myself. I'm just a writer.
Understood. And of course, I'm very curious how you first were introduced to Hitler and the Third Reich, and what got you interested in this subject?
Well, I've always been interested. When I was a teenager, I thought that I want to know more about this time, and I spoke to my grandfather about it, and I was not satisfied with his stories. So I thought one day I want to maybe write about the subject, but I didn't know what angle I would use. So in fact, it was a DJ that gave me the idea to write about drugs in Nazi Germany, because he had heard that drugs played a big role, and I thought that was quite unusual to hear that from him. He's a good friend of mine. He told me this about 6 or 7 years ago.
Right.
I asked him, how do you know this? And he told me that a friend of his found old pills from the Nazi times in an East German apartment, and they had on the label, it said that the ingredient was methamphetamine. So he told me this story. So I started researching this medication, which was called Pervitin. That was the brand name. And I found out that methamphetamine was widely used in Nazi Germany, and that was kind of the beginning. And then I did academic research in several archives looking at documents on how methamphetamine was actually used, or what other drugs played an important role, and what drugs were used by the army, and what drugs were used by Hitler. So it became quite a big and long research.
Understood. Now, I've been able to read some of your book, Blitzed, and it's incredible. It's packed with very solid information. I truly recommend it for all of you out there listening to this. And I'm curious, did you experience any difficulty or criticism when you first published this book, Norman?
Not really, because in Germany everyone was interested in the subject, because in Germany we think we know everything about the time. There was some criticism from the German army, because I was I did interviews with army historians who gave me also information. And then later on, one guy wrote to me that if I write too much on how the German army was being helped by the use of stimulants, namely methamphetamine, I would kind of portray them as being dependent on their chemical stimulant, rather than explaining how magnificent their fighting capabilities actually were. So that was a criticism that came out of German army circles, which actually surprised me, because I didn't think anyone from the current German army would kind of defend the Wehrmacht, the Nazi army of the 40s.
Yeah, that is pretty interesting. Even the fact that you showed up on their radar.
Well, I was interested in the so-called Blitzkrieg, the speed war that the Nazis, in a way, invented, or the Wehrmacht at the time, especially the campaign against France in the spring of 1940, when 35 million dosages of methamphetamine were being used. So speaking to army historians, asking them how they evaluate that massive drug intake. So I kind of approached them.
Right. For those that don't know, in Germany, there are strict laws banning Nazi symbols and memorabilia. I forgot the exact name of that, however. The German law criminalizing the Holocaust denial.
Yeah, I don't know what the name of the law is, but you're very welcome in Germany to do research, but you cannot glorify the Nazi past, which I think is a good thing. I mean, in my book, I do the very opposite. I kind of deconstruct the last myths about the Nazi war machine by showing that a lot of their success was actually comes from taking methamphetamine. So this had never been talked about before in the German public.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And going back to the memorabilia, I've seen a few of the uniforms from the SS, and I always liked them, to be honest with you. I also like the hats very much with the skull. I always thought that was pretty cool, but I'm sure individuals out there in Germany do not like any of that, which is why there's a law against having any of these things. So I always found that very interesting.
Well, actually, the SS uniforms were designed by Hugo Boss, which is a very famous clothing brand even today. So the uniforms are quite smart, actually.
Yeah, those are very intimidating. And the German soldiers were very feared as well. And by the way, Norman, is methamphetamine still popular in Germany today?
Well, it's illegal now. The company who made it and turned it into a brand that they called Pervitin stopped producing it in 1980. So it disappeared from the market in 1980. Since then, it's only available illegally, like in all the other countries in the world. It's basically called crystal meth, or it's called meth.
Right.
So you can get crystal meth, especially in the eastern part of Germany, which borders the Czech Republic, because in the Czech Republic are the largest illegal meth labs currently in Europe. So it kind of comes from there. So it's quite a problem in in Germany, especially in East Germany,
Ah.
with young people getting addicted to
Interesting, because I live
it.
on the southern border, about 12 miles away from the Mexican border out here. Ironically, Donald Trump is out here as well today, at this very moment as we speak. And one of the major problems out here is meth and black tar heroin. So I was just kind of curious what the most popular drug was out there in Germany. I also suspect it's meth and heroin, I'm pretty sure.
It kind of depends on the region. In the east
Ah.
of Germany, it's meth. But we don't have our drug problem is not as large as the one of the United States.
Yes.
I think in the US, you really have huge drug problems. Because here we have a much better social welfare system, and so people, even if they are out of jobs, they still get support from the government. So it's a little different.
Understood. So you can't just buy chocolate dosed with meth anymore like you used to.
No, that's those days are over.
Long
Maybe
gone, yes.
the Hildebrand chocolates that were sold in the late 30s and 40s are legend. One piece of chocolate contained 13 milligrams of methamphetamine, which is quite a lot. They were taken off the market in the early 40s. Even though meth was legal in Nazi Germany, those chocolates were too strong, so they were not allowed to be sold anymore.
Yeah, it's very interesting how that played such a significant role back in the early days. And I'm putting up a photo right now for those that are in the chat room of a young woman who's going through some of these chocolates now. And the Nazi regime, they preached an ideology of physical, mental, and moral purity, as you described in your book. But that was not the truth. That brings me to Hitler. I also understand he was heavily on drugs, but did he consume meth at all?
No, his personal physician Theo Morell thought that meth is the whip for the horse, and he would not give the German leader the whip. He would give him the hay. So he actually gave him different drugs, especially opioids. Hitler was using one opioid in particular at the time. It was the brand name in Germany was Eukodal. Today it's still on the market as oxycodone, so that's the very drug that is fueling the American opioid crisis. That was actually the favorite drug of Hitler from 43 to 45, especially in 44. He was using a lot of oxycodone, getting it injected into the bloodstream and into his veins. So there's actually only one record that Hitler used methamphetamine. That was Christmas 1944. He got an injection of methamphetamine. So he actually used it once. He might have used it more often, but there's no records to prove that, so it would be speculation. But there's a lot of records proving that he used opioids, so we can focus on that when we talk about Hitler's drug abuse.
And what is your personal take on Hitler?
Well, he portrayed himself to the outside world as a saint-like figure who would live a very pure and clean life. He was known to be against smoking, against alcohol, against drinking even coffee or tea, against any form of stimulant. That was his image. That was part of the cult that was created around him. But the fact was that he was using a lot of prescription drugs that his personal physician Theo Morell gave him. So he took over 90 medications and received 1 to 2 injections daily. So it's the truth is very different than the image that was portrayed around him by the Nazi propaganda machine.
That's very interesting. So he didn't even drink coffee at all. Is that what you're saying?
No, he drank only apple tea.
My goodness. I'm saying that because I'm addicted to coffee. So it's hard to imagine no one
Yeah,
else.
no.
Yeah, I'm like, what? How could he not like coffee?
No, coffee is also a drug, and he didn't use it, and he only used oxycodone, but he wouldn't use coffee, so it's a bit of a contradiction.
Hitler is a bit of a weirdo, huh? Kind of strange guy
Well, he
there.
set the world on fire.
Yes. He, no
Yes.
denying that he was not a great charismatic leader, no matter what he did, that's still pretty wild that he was able to create all of this, even if it was for, I guess, evil per se.
Yeah, I mean, the Nazi movement was quite powerful. Unfortunately, they had ideas and were trying to crush minorities and persecuting everyone who didn't think like they thought. So they used their abilities to change things not to the benefit of the German people or to the benefit of the world.
Yes, he was also interested in the occult and other strange things. That's why I also said he was kind of a weirdo in that sense, that he was so into these other alternative means. But I guess it helped to a certain degree.
The Nazi movement was not really a rational political movement, as like we know. Other political movements, it was an irrational movement that was working a lot with techniques of mass manipulation, and it's very interesting. It's not it's a very complex
It is, yeah.
topic to examine.
It is. It is very interesting when you look back in time, and a lot of individuals go way back in time in terms of what America could and couldn't have done differently in 1933. That's always a question that still remains unanswered.
Well, Hollywood wanted to make a film in the early 30s showing the anti-Semitism of the Nazi regime, but the Nazis protested in Hollywood saying that they would confiscate the properties of the American film studios in Germany, and then MGM actually didn't make the movie. So America probably could have done a lot more in the beginning to stop it, but also no one really knew how bad it would, get. So, and America was far away; it was on the other side of the ocean. It was fortunate how the Nazis were able to develop and gain strength, and they actually got support also from American sources. They got funding from England and America. So everyone in the West in the beginning, in a way, supported the Nazis because they were seen as a tool to fight communism, which was feared to be spreading from Moscow towards the West.
Yes, and I'm also very curious if you had done any sort of research or just any kind of mild reading on what they call the war on drugs here in America.
Well, the war on drugs, in a way, was invented by the Nazis because when they took power in 1933, they said that all drug abuse should stop, and they persecuted drug users quite heavily. That's why it's such a big irony that methamphetamine then becomes such an important medicine in Nazi Germany. It's not seen as a drug, it's sold legally over the counter in the beginning. But officially, the Nazis were this anti-drug movement. The US war on drugs is also modeled on the Nazi war on drugs that started in 1933 when drug addicts were being criminalized and put in prisons and concentration camps.
Oh, yes. And of course, speaking of the German perception of America, I'm curious to get your opinion on our president, Donald Trump, since I did mention him earlier. I'm curious what your opinion is and what other people are saying about him there, just the general folks, non-political types that you've talked to in your regular life.
Well, I don't think you would find a person Or you would find many people in Berlin that would appreciate Donald Trump. He's seen as the worst president in American history, and many people ridicule him and think that it's a big tragedy for the world that such a person has become president.
Yes, I had a feeling you would say that. I had a feeling the German folks do not really like him very much. I have a few listeners out there in Germany, and they're not very much into anything having to do with politics. And they've told me a few times that they just don't really care too much for politicians, and they see Trump as just another political talking head, I guess you could say.
Well, I mean, we in Germany, we had a wall in Berlin separating the people, so I think
Yeah.
Germans don't like the idea of a wall separating people. So that doesn't really make him popular in Germany.
No doubt. And I'm also curious, do you have any other books in the works right now? Are you gonna write another book at all?
Yeah, I just completed another book, which is about a group of young people in Berlin. It's also a nonfiction, historical nonfiction book. In the late 30s, they were trying to fight the Nazi dictatorship, and they formed a very strong and interesting movement, producing illegal leaflets, helping friends that were persecuted. So it's about resistance, basically. So that book is going to come out in the United States in June next year.
Oh, okay. Very interesting. And Norman, by the way, I didn't get a chance to ask you this, but were you raised at all in a, I guess you could say, religious household at all?
I was raised in a Protestant household, but my family is not really religious, so it was not really an intense religious education that I received. I mean, in Germany we have religious education in high school, actually, so we can choose between Protestant and Catholic education. So I was always schooled in a Protestant way, but religion never really played a big role in my life, I have to say.
Understood.
In my early life. So I kind of discovered religion and spirituality a bit later on.
Oh, so you do consider yourself religious then?
Well, I consider myself spiritual, so I'm more
Ah,
into
okay.
meditation, and I'm drawn to, for example, Buddhism, or I'm interested in religion, actually. I mean, I was also in India recently, so I was quite interested in Hinduistic philosophies, and I'm interested in all kinds of religion, actually. But I'm not really religious. I don't practice a certain religion, which is actually quite normal in Germany. Most people don't practice religion. It's not as religious as the United States, Germany.
Yes, I'm not very religious whatsoever. I'm actually an agnostic atheist. It's just I'm always very interested in what people believe in, what they don't believe in. And this is just another part of getting to know you personally and for the others out there listening to, get a glimpse of who you really are. And yeah, that brings me to just one of my other curiosities about yourself, Norman. What other subjects are you interested in? Because I know this is just one of the many layers of your personality. So I'm totally curious about other things that you might be into, but you haven't really gotten a chance to talk about that sort of thing in an interview.
That's a bit of a difficult question. What am I interested in?
Yeah, because there's other things about you that I'm sure you've never really talked about.
What do you mean?
Well, for instance, the whole thing about religion, and that brings me back to asking you personally if you believe in an afterlife, for example.
It's an interesting question.
It is very difficult, yeah. I
It's a bit
understand.
difficult to talk about it in an interview. What do you think? Do you
Well,
believe in an afterlife?
sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. That's why I'm an agnostic atheist. Sometimes I get this feeling that perhaps something could possibly exist once the lights turn off and we shut down permanently. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I feel that it is just a shutdown and it is permanent, that nothing else happens. Our memory just ceases to exist. Everything just sort of fades away in darkness. Depends on my mood, though.
Well, yeah. I don't know. It's hard for me to answer this question right now.
Oh, I understand. It's very unusual, especially asking someone when, you know, we don't have any of these sort of things planned. It's more organic this way. And another thing is we took a little bit to get things started. You were putting your son away to bed there. See, that's another thing. I didn't even know you had a son.
Yeah, I have a son. He's 3 years old, and he had the problem tonight that I wouldn't allow him to use his baby bottle anymore because yesterday we were at the dentist, and the dentist said it's not good for his jaw. So I told him he couldn't use it anymore, and he was really upset because he said, "Now how can I drink when I'm lying in bed? How does it work? Because now I have to kind of get up and drink from a cup, and that's no fun." And I didn't really know how to, you know, tell him that. I mean, I it was hard to console him. I could actually feel with him that this is a big life changer in a way for him, because he was used to it for quite some time. Well, basically all of his life, that he just lie in bed and have his bottle. So that was a little bit difficult. Before I got into the interview here, I had a bit of parenting to do, actually.
Yeah, for some people, that's what it's like for people in religion. When you talk about certain things, they hold tight, like your son does, to the bottle there.
Yeah. Yeah, we get used to it. I guess we all have our bottles and get used to it until maybe someone tells us that this bottle is unhealthy for us in some respect. And maybe then we change. I mean, that was a problem with Hitler. He was getting very used to his daily injections from his doctor, not even thinking that these injections could make him addicted to, for example, oxycodone, because he just knew that if he gets an injection, he feels better afterwards. So that was what he was interested in, and that was actually what the doctor was also interested in, because he wanted to make his patient A, as he called Hitler, happy. So the two men kind of moved themselves into a corner in which it was getting higher and higher dosages of dangerous addictive drugs. So it's quite an interesting story there.
Yes, it is. And were the Nazis at all using mescaline?
Mescaline?
Yes.
Well, mescaline is a hallucinogenic drug actually was not used by the Nazis. It was only abused by the SS in the concentration camp of Dachau, where they used mescaline, not methamphetamine, mescaline they used to give to inmates, to prisoners, trying to develop brainwashing techniques. So they dosed prisoners with mescaline and then tried to extract the deepest secrets from those inmates that were high on mescaline without knowing that they were high on mescaline. They just didn't understand what's going on anymore. So that's an early form of developing brainwashing techniques.
Yeah, the MKUltra project, basically, here for the Americans. That's how that got started.
Well, when the Americans liberated Dachau, they found these reports on those tests and confiscated them, and then expanded on them for MKUltra.
Yeah, that's always a strange part in our world's history, that something like that was even developed.
Well, it's a bit sad that the United States, when they invaded Nazi Germany, actually took a lot of bad things that the Nazis had developed and used them for their own goods in their Cold War against the Soviet Union, against communism. So that Cold War that the United States was fighting was damaging to the democratic process within the United States.
Yeah, we also took von Braun from Germany as well and brought him over here. So yeah, we definitely took a lot of different important factors.
Yeah, Werner von Braun had developed the V2 rocket for Nazi Germany, and then he was given a job in, I think, White Sands in New Mexico to develop the missile program for the United States for the armed forces. So America freely employed Nazi scientists in order to get a head start. In order to get advantages towards the Soviet Union, which was also using Nazi knowledge in order to get ahead in the Cold War race, because Nazi Germany was a hotbed of military inventions. So East and West tried to get as much as they could from that place when they invaded it.
Oh, yes. And I'm curious, do you believe in extraterrestrials, my friend?
In what?
In extraterrestrials? Random question.
I've actually never encountered extraterrestrials. I mean, I kind of believe in William Burroughs saying that language is a virus from outer space. I think a lot of our knowledge comes from outer space, and I'm of the opinion that even structures that we still find on planet Earth were being erected with help from outer space. So I guess I do believe in aliens, but I have never really seen a UFO, for example. So still open for these kind of experiences.
Yeah, I was curious what you thought about that. I was curious if perhaps the German people have seen anything out there in the skies.
We don't have as much as you have in the United States. I mean, I traveled U.S., especially in the West, Western states. There's a lot of UFO sightings. So I think you have more action because you have more space. I mean, Germany is a very dense country, so maybe aliens avoid it because it's too populated. I don't know.
Yeah, who really knows? But I'm glad I asked you. I was very
Maybe Trump.
curious.
Maybe Trump is an alien.
He might be, you never know. He might be. There's a lot of people out here I suspect are not completely human. Maybe Trump is not human at all. We don't know. We really don't know. And of course, what was that, my friend? Sorry.
I would like to know what drugs he uses, actually.
Well, that's actually a great question. As you know, most older Americans here, they are on some sort of form of medication. Not everyone in the older generation out here is completely sober. They have to be on something. That's just a little known fact.
I think no one is sober in the older generation in the United States.
Not at all.
It's prescription medication country.
I agree 100%. I always think that in my mind, anytime I'm talking to a very much older gentleman, I always have the mindset that this person is not sober. As rude as that may sound, that does go through my head.
They would probably claim that they're sober.
Exactly. But we both know that's not true. Trump, though, his remarkable energy that he has, the relentlessness that he has in terms of these campaigns and where he's going, the rallies, all these sort of publications, it all takes a great amount of energy. And I would have to imagine he's not sober. He can't be. Hypothetically
No.
speaking, of course. I don't know for sure. I'm just saying. I don't want a lawsuit here.
I think you're fine.
Yeah, I think we're good. It's just a joke. I like to say that though. The whole lawsuit thing, it just sounds funny.
It's still a democracy.
Right. But now
it's still
here,
a free country.
It still is a free country, but the whole freedom of speech thing, you know, I don't know. People do get sued over things they say and over opinions. People go after you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very unusual thing to have here in America. A very strange time in history, especially with social media. You say anything to someone that you offend, either in real life or online, and they'll go after your livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
That's very weird. Yeah. That's just one of the many strange issues that are ongoing here in America. And are there any weird sort of things like that going on in Germany right now that we in America aren't even aware of?
Well, we're having a right-wing populist party called Alternative for Germany that has about 15% of the votes. So they are kind of a problem. But I think Germany is still a much more sane system than the United States, but maybe I'm too pro-German in that respect. But I think Germany still is a very healthy system right now, with a good discourse and somewhat sane politicians. I mean, our chancellor might have her, you know, mistakes, but she's not a cruel racist person. She's actually trying not to do evil things, and we've had a lot of evil leaders, so we're kind of happy right now with Merkel.
That's interesting. Very interesting. And, of course, I don't want to take up too much of your time. We are coming to a close very soon here, but I did want to ask you more about media and what some of the things that you like to watch outside of, you know, the political realm, just normal stuff. Are you watching TV or are you watching movies? What's going on with you, Norman?
The only problem that I really have with writing books is that it's so time consuming that I actually don't find a lot of time to read or watch shows as much as I actually would like to. So, I mean, I do, as probably every other decent human being on the planet now, watch TV series on Netflix and stuff like that, but I just don't have so much time. I work 8 to 12 hours each day writing the new book, and then, you know, taking care of the kid. I also have a daughter.
Okay.
So I don't have a lot of time. That's maybe my only problem. Or I realize that time is the most precious thing that we have in our lives, and we need to spend it very carefully and do the right things and not waste it.
Yeah, you're right about that. Very right about that. The lack of time, that's a big one for everyone.
Yeah.
It's hard to find the time to do things we'd like to do. Goodness. Yeah. So, I also wanted to ask you before I cut you loose here, if there's anything on your mind, anything you'd like to get off your chest per se, right now would be a great time.
Well, I'd have no idea who your listeners are. So I'm not really sure what audience I'm talking to. And America is a big place with very different individuals.
It's very mixed.
Very mixed. So I just have this one message that I think we should appreciate the variety of the human species and how different we are. And I think that should be our core value. So we should be very careful when people are trying to appear better than other people, and or trying to close out other people, and so that's the only thing that I want to portray in my work, that that we move away from any form of superiority or thinking that we're better than others. Maybe that's the only thing I really want to say.
Yeah, that's pretty important, and I could hear the sirens going off out there.
Yeah, well,
Oh
I'm in the
no.
big city right now.
Ah,
And
okay.
it's night, it's Friday night, so
It's
everything's
happening.
heating up here in Berlin, yeah.
Yeah, people are starting to go out. And that's another thing. You haven't been
Yeah.
able to go out yourself, right, Norman? Having to take care of the kids. You haven't really gone out to enjoy the nightlife, per se.
No, but I have enjoyed it intensely in the 90s, as we
Oh,
briefly spoke
yes.
about, so I'm fine to stay home now these days.
Yes, in the 90s, that was when you were in your prime, in your heyday, going
Yeah.
about there, enjoying the musical scene. And Norman, did you experiment with any drugs yourself?
Well, for me, also drinking green tea is experimenting with drugs, and
True.
but of course they're more severe drugs than that. And
Right.
in the 90s, they were quite popular in Berlin, so I did try different things, and I think that actually was important for writing the book Blitz Drugs in Nazi Germany, to have a certain understanding myself of how certain drugs and drug types affect the nervous system and the brain. Yes, I do have some experience, and I think it actually helps me with writing books.
Very interesting. And of course, as you've mentioned, it is the evening out there. So that would mean Guten Abend. Is that how you say that?
Yeah, guten Abend.
Yes.
Guten Abend is correct. And actually, for me, it will be gute Nacht, which is good night,
Oh.
because I think I'll actually, while you still enjoy your afternoon, I will probably go to bed soon.
Understood. Yes. I've been saying Guten Morgen when opening the show, because some of the listeners that tune in here are from Germany, and as soon as I started saying that on the show, I started getting more and more German listeners. It's kind of funny. So I'm trying to learn a few different words every now and then.
That's good.
Oh yes. So Norman, again, I do want to thank you very much for being a part of the program. Definitely plug your website if you'd like, my friend.
Well, I mean, you can go to normanohler.com and learn more about my work, or just read Blitzed. I think then you will have a lot more of my way of portraying the world and in historical things that still influence our life today.
Very good. Norman, once again, thank you for being here. We will touch base again in the near future, my friend.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be on your program. Thank you for talking to me, and have a great day, and let's be in touch.
Yes, sir. All right, my friend. Good night and take care out there.
Good night.
All right, bye-bye.
Good day.
Yes, sir.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And there he goes, ladies and gentlemen. That was Norman Ohler. Great, great guy. I did enjoy talking to him. And I hope you too. I hope you guys enjoy talking to him. He was a great guest. Very interesting, very different sort of opinion on different things, different matters. And he also relayed some of the things I thought he would hear on the program. Very, very interesting. I want to thank all of you out there for listening. And remember, you can catch the podcast version of this program on iTunes, Stitcher, and the CastBox, basically every popular platform there is. And of course, I will be returning tomorrow. Marshall Masters will be here. We got another Planet X update for you all. And yes, Sam Hill. I'm glad you're here, Sam. Mr. Ambien himself, you say in the chat room. Yes, I believe he was pretty tired before he even jumped on here to talk to us. He was already battling some issues with sleep, and of course, trying to get his kids to go to sleep there. But in the end, it all came together, and that's what's important here. And I do want to thank all of you out there for listening again. Truly appreciate that. And for those that will be listening to this on a replay, keep in mind all the programs, the usual shows go down on Saturday at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. That's 10 p.m. Eastern Time, live every Saturday night, my friends. So I will see you tomorrow. Same time, same place, my friends. I'm Michael Deacon, and thank you for being here. And with that said, the world is a mysterious place, and life itself is a mystery. Until next time, Good night, everybody.
This is the story of the miracle sea in the desert.
Michael Deacon.
Whoa, what's going on? Somebody in my house right now?
That Michael Deacon, he had the nerve to comment on some of my posts on my damaging colleague combatants page.
So you need Michael? He says you need Michael Deacon if you're gonna have a Michael on. That is hello.
Oh shit!
That is hitting
Michael Horn.
Hitting below the belt.
I had a girlfriend who used to say out loud to me, "You're a woman, aren't you?"